Welcome to Your New Mexico Government. I'm your host, Kaliele Colonna. Coronavirus caught many of us off guard, but there are plenty of questions about when governments and hospitals decided to start preparing, how quickly they've moved, and what can be done to get ready. The answers to these questions are really a matter of life and death. On today's episode, we discover how prepared hospitals and healthcare facilities in New Mexico really are. Our podcast is focused on COVID-19, and we're so thankful that KUNM is giving us some time on its airwaves. We'll be here all week long at 8 p.m., so tune in. Now, we've heard about national shortages of staff, test kits, and PPEs. That's affecting hospitals across the country. That begs the question, how ready are the healthcare providers here? Today, we try to get some answers as we face what projections are estimating will be a long couple of months with many patients coming through the doors. We hear from reporters, doctors from UNMH, hospital administration, nursing students, and New Mexico's lieutenant governor. One way or the other, we are going to find out if we're ready for what is to come. All of that and more coming up later, but first, a call to our listeners. If you've been listening to the show on air this week, thank you, K&M, for that. Or if you've subscribed to the podcast, thank you if you have. You should know that we have a hotline and we want to hear from you. Call 505-218-7084. Take tomorrow's show, for instance. We've got a question for you. What's changing in what you care about? During the time of self-isolation, people have had time to reflect and reframe, to discover what's truly important to them. Tell us what's going on, or maybe as you look at how this is unfolding, you see large-scale systems that don't make sense, and you're feeling ready to take some action, call us up. That number again, 505-218-7084, or you can always email us at yournmgov@gmail.com. Executive producer Marisa DeMarco is here with a quick rundown of what we know today, Thursday, April 2nd, as of 5 p.m.
We heard on our show yesterday about billions of dollars set aside for tribes by the federal relief package passed and signed at the end of March. Navajo Nation President Jonathan Nez said in his interview with National Native News anchor Antonia Gonzalez that the money was tied up in bureaucracy. The Navajo Nation has seen a high rate of infection and 7 deaths from coronavirus. Today, a bipartisan group of lawmakers is pushing the federal government to release that money to tribes around the country so they can create and boost critical healthcare access, according to the Payson Roundup news source in Arizona. The Federal Labor Department reported that 10 million jobs have been lost as the virus spreads around the country, and more than 6.6 million people in the U.S. filed for unemployment last week. The Washington Post is reporting that the CDC recommends that people wear cloth masks or face coverings in public because the virus is often spread by people without symptoms. President Trump said today a recommendation is coming out soon, but it won't be mandatory. In New Mexico, the governor is strongly encouraging people to wear them. Here in the state today, there are 403 positive cases and 7 virus-related deaths. The Department of Health is testing almost 80 inmates at the Bernalillo County Jail, according to the Albuquerque Journal, after an inmate there tested positive earlier this week. The paper reports the state is also about to see $16.7 million in emergency housing assistance. For your New Mexico government, I'm Marisa DeMarco.
Lieutenant Governor Howie Morales spoke about hospital readiness down south with KUNM News Director Hannah Colton on KUNM's Let's Talk New Mexico this morning. Here's a clip of their conversation.
And we heard from folks in Las Cruces that they had long lines for drive-up testing. Some places were running out of tests. What is the state doing to ensure that Las Cruces and other cities and towns throughout the state get enough of those tests?
And I've heard that as well. Coming from southern New Mexico, I'm actually working out of my home in Silver City today, and I hear that as well. And so the governor has been very clear that we're going to continue to push the federal government to get us more tests, to make sure that we can have those available for all parts of the state, especially those rural communities who may not have all the services that may be afforded to larger cities. But nonetheless, every person in our state is important, including making sure we take care of all of our tribal communities and have the testing available for them as well.
We know that Albuquerque has the bulk of the state's hospitals, and Governor Lujan Grisham has requested an additional 248-bed Army hospital here. What about hospitals in Las Cruces, in rural areas? Are they prepared to handle an influx of cases? Do they have enough personal protective equipment?
first of all, yeah, we're fortunate that the governor advocated so early to make sure the federal government knew that we needed a hospital here for additional beds, and that was approved this week. We don't know the details of where that's going to be or the specifics of it, but we'll get more information from them. But all across the state of New Mexico, our healthcare workers, our hospitals, all of our clinics are so vital to taking care of people across the state. I know that having the experience myself personally working in a hospital of just the challenges that are in place, we are concerned that the crisis that has hit not only has done it from a healthcare perspective, but also from an economic perspective. We have to provide resources to our hospital because whether it's PPE and the shortage of that, of taking care of our healthcare workers, to the finance piece of it, I am concerned that our hospitals are really in a difficult spot. And so I know some of that stimulus money coming from the federal government is going to be there to assist our New Mexico hospitals. I hope that we can do more from the state as well to assist and keep those doors available for those who need the services.
For more of a reporting angle to see how prepared New Mexico hospitals and healthcare facilities are, I'm happy to be back on the line with Algernon DeMassa, reporter for the Las Cruces Sun News. Algernon, thanks for being with me, man.
Good to be with you, Khalil.
Let me ask you, how are you feeling? How are the people you live with, your friends, family? How's everyone feeling right now?
Everyone's feeling pretty good. I live in Luna County, which is adjacent to Doña Ana County in southern New Mexico, where we don't have any confirmed cases of the novel coronavirus yet, although there is still a lot of concern about how many people may have the virus but are not showing symptoms yet and are still out and about.
Okay. Yeah, that's a thing that I've been hearing about in all these reports and all these interviews. A lot of people are completely ignoring the social distancing guidelines, and it does not make sense to me because it's going to create a problem, which is the topic of what we're talking about today, because they're talking a lot about increasing hospital capacities in Albuquerque. I want to know, how are things in Las Cruces? What are the hospitals down there doing to prepare?
The hospitals are being a little bit tight-lipped about the particular challenges that they're facing. They have been publicly stating that they've been in a state of preparation for quite some time. We have, of course, Memorial Medical Center in Las Cruces, as well as the private facility Mountain View Regional Medical Center. And these are hospitals that have protocols in place for handling cases of an epidemic, but resources are limited, especially for the required medical protective gear. And they're getting on the best footing that they can and trying to let the public know that they're prepared and they'll make it work no matter what happens.
But you said they were tight-lipped. How tight-lipped are they, and what are they being tight-lipped about?
Well, specifically about the extent of needed material, such as ventilators, in the case that patients require intensive care, as well as personnel. How many ICU-trained nurses do we have in the event that cases spike? Now, one good piece of news for the southern part of the state is that we don't have a lot of cases compared to the more populous areas like especially Bernalillo County. Doña Ana County only has 21 cases, and there are several counties in the southern part of the state that have no confirmed cases or have one or two. Hopefully, if we are practicing our physical distancing and keeping that curve of a spike in cases down in our part of the state, we can spare our systems a lot of strain.
But are people observing the stay-at-home order in Las Cruces?
Not everyone. And the New York Times, they published a graph that makes the southern part of the state look a little bit better than the state's own assessment of how people are complying down in our part of the state. But another thing to take into account is that in the more rural parts of the state, people may have to travel further for either medical visits that are essential or even for things like grocery shopping. And so a lot of these assessments are based on cell phone data and are people getting in their cars and traveling places. And the fact is that in the southern part of the state, there is a lot more travel that is necessary even for that essential business.
So the governor announced that an Army hospital is coming to Albuquerque and they're going to take over an old hospital building up here to build out that capacity. And she said that they're looking around the state to do the same. But so far, it seems like these things are only happening more up here in the Albuquerque area. As the second biggest city in the state, do you think that you all are getting enough state support and attention?
I don't think that we've been forgotten. The governor did say in her most recent press conference that she was working with the Army Corps of Engineers about building some hospital capacity in other parts of the state, including Las Cruces. And that makes sense because Las Cruces and Doña Ana County, of course, are very close to the U.S.-Mexico border, as well as the border with El Paso. And El Paso County has 68 cases as we are speaking, including a few cases that are right in the El Paso area adjacent bordering Doña Ana County. And there's a lot of travel through here because Santa Teresa is a very important port of trade. So, you know, it does sound to me like we haven't been forgotten, that they are looking at the possibility of having to build capacity here in case our cases do grow, including especially our severe cases.
Yeah, the severe cases, which would put a strain on supplies. And the federal government announced yesterday that the national stockpile of masks, gowns, gloves are pretty much gone. Have you heard about how hospitals there are preparing for a potential shortage?
We haven't heard a whole lot of detail about what they're doing. I know that the state has been procuring its own supplies for quite some time, and other entities have also been trying to procure supplies. And the federal government is trying to assist with relief from price gouging for some of these items as they become more scarce. And so we will have to see, but this might be a really tough battle when you still have an environment where states are competing with each other for that gear, and as well as just it may end up costing a lot more money in the long run.
Yeah, that adds a frantic element to dealing with this scarcity. And when people become frantic in uncertain times, things can get ugly. Let me ask you, some folks around the state, they're sewing masks. Have you seen creative responses from community members down there?
Quite a number of people. There have been several efforts, including at the city level in Las Cruces, and also just volunteers who have talent and sewing machines and the ability. So a lot of the masks that are being made are the sort of cotton masks that provide some protection, not entirely adequate, but they do at least provide protection from you. If you are carrying the virus and you're wearing a mask, it becomes much harder for you to transfer that virus to other people, mm-hmm. although it doesn't necessarily afford you the protection of a N95 or similar kind of respiratory mask.
Yeah, but it is something. It is something. Now, what questions for hospitals and medical providers do you or other reporters at the Sun News have as this is moving forward? What are you all keeping your eye on?
The big question is just the number of ICU beds, the number of nurses and physicians, as well as ventilators, and how rapidly can we convert some anesthesia devices to ventilators? How quickly can some of the private partners working with the state help to provide some of that equipment and supply? But it's not just equipment, and it's not even just beds. It's also just personnel. And especially in the more rural parts of the state where the health systems are more vulnerable, what do we do if there's suddenly a lot of cases and people who can't necessarily travel up into Albuquerque to get medical care?
Yeah, and the best way we can try to help out as civilians in this sense is to socially distance and wash our hands.
Physically distance, wash hands, and take the threat seriously.
Very seriously. He's Algernon Damasa, reporter for the Las Cruces Sun News. Thank you so much for being with me, my friend.
Always a pleasure, Khalil. Thanks for having me.
Our show is about hospital readiness, and I am with Dr. David Pitcher. He is a senior associate dean of clinical affairs for the University of New Mexico School of Medicine. Dr. Pitcher, thank you so much for being with me today.
You bet, and good morning.
Good morning to you. And let me ask you first, how are you? How is your family? Is everyone in good health?
My family is in good health, and we are doing our part and maintaining social distancing as best we can.
That's what we're all doing. We're all working from home at the radio station, so we're trying to help out as best we can as well. Let me ask you, the federal government announced that there are no more PPEs in the national stockpile. This was yesterday. How are UNMH and other healthcare facilities in the UNM system doing on gloves, gowns, and masks?
At present, we're actually doing reasonably okay with some of the critical supplies. We have more than a 15-day supply on hand, and we are, in some cases, more than a 30-day supply on hand, but we're appropriately concerned about the dwindling supplies of necessary protective gear that are available nationally. So we're taking very aggressive measures to utilize the stockpile that we've got very wisely and to follow appropriate CDC guidance on how best to preserve and utilize that equipment. We're keeping a close eye on it, believe me.
You mentioned that you were concerned. Does the staff share that sentiment? Does the staff feel safe and prepared?
I think generally the staff is anxious and worried about, you know, whether they're going to have the appropriate equipment to keep them safe. Right now we do, and we think that with the strategies that we're employing to carefully and judiciously use that equipment, we will be able to continue to keep them safe. But yes, the staff is concerned.
Yeah. Yeah, rightfully so. Now, how about ventilators? We know there's a shortage around the country for ventilators. How are you all set for those?
Within the UNM health system, we're actually in pretty good shape with ventilator capacity. But I know that statewide, that overall New Mexico is short in terms of the projected need for ventilators.
It's going to be an issue. Now, how is the health system preparing for the influx of COVID cases that projections and the government say is coming in the next few weeks?
We actually started preparing for an event like this over 10 years ago, prior to the H1N1 influenza pandemic event. And we developed very robust plans there that include identifying how we would care for a huge influx or surge of patients coming into the organization, how we would manage our staffing and resources to meet that demand. And so for the last at least 6 weeks, we have been running our emergency operations center and our incident command system. And we've been aggressively revising, reviewing, and testing those plans. It's been an all-consuming activity in our organization. And we think we're at a point where we're as prepared as we can be, and we're continuing to work with other health systems, our state government, federal agencies, in assuring that we have any assistance that's available to us available and that we're coordinating our activities.
Now on Vice, the publication ER Doctor Frank Heiler painted a picture of the hospital as a slow-moving bureaucracy that was not making decisions fast enough or acting boldly enough in the face of what's coming. Have you experienced that? And if you've read the article, what do you make of it?
I have not experienced that. I think one of the things that we're quite proud of at UNM is that we have a long history of outstanding emergency management response. We're the state's only level one trauma center. We deal with small scale mass casualty incidents all the time. We have very robust and deep expertise in our organization around emergency management. And one of the principles in emergency management is that when you're faced with an emergency, you set aside the normal administrative bureaucracy and you set up what's called an incident command system. And that allows us to rapidly make decisions, deploy resources, and so forth that wouldn't normally occur under normal operating conditions. And we've been in that mode for over 6 weeks. So I am not seeing bureaucracy getting in the way of us being able to plan, prepare, or mitigate in this response.
Okay. He also states that hospitals become accelerators for community transmission. What is being done to prevent that?
Well, again, the way that we try to mitigate against that is that we control access to the facility. So we're actually screening visitors to the institution, you know, to make sure that they don't have symptoms. We're limiting the number of visitors into the facility. We're following all standard precautions for an infectious disease process with the patients that we have. And we're basically trying to separate potentially infectious patients from the community at large or from our patients at large within the hospital facility. So it's really a combination of all those things where we try and limit the hospital itself as being a site where there's significant community spread that occurs.
Okay. Now, have physicians and nurses at UNMH been treating COVID cases?
Yes.
How is that going?
So far, so good. But we're not seeing that predicted surge of patients yet. So our resources are not being overwhelmed. and all the steps that we've taken were put in place in anticipation of a surge of patients, as is happening in New York. All those things have made a difference in freeing up our staff and our resources to be able to care for those COVID patients.
Say someone who's one of our listeners is at home. When should people come into the hospital if they're showing COVID symptoms? At what point should they head down so they don't overwhelm the staff and the supply chain?
So for most people, if they're feeling ill or believe they have COVID symptoms, we encourage them to call the Department of Health hotline number to get guidance on what to do. We don't want those patients with symptoms immediately coming into the hospital because that's not always necessary. Now, certainly if somebody is sick or concerned about their health with shortness of breath, for example, trouble breathing, of course we want them to come into the hospital. But if it's symptoms suggestive of an influenza-like illness, fever, cough, and so forth, we'd prefer that they call the Department of Health first for guidance and stay out of the hospital for those milder symptoms.
Okay, now people in our community and all around the country are sewing masks, and they're trying to make the safe ones possible that are comparable to the N94 or N95 masks. Do you think there may be a time when healthcare workers in your system will need those handmade masks?
I don't think we want to take that off the table. I really don't. I mean, we currently don't need that, and we have the verified safety of the existing supplies that we have on hand. But like I say, I think we need to be prepared that we might need to use those kinds of resources if the usual supply chains dry up.
Mm-hmm. Now, what do you most want the public to know right now?
I think that I'd want the public to know that UNM Health System is doing everything we possibly can to be prepared. And we have a long history of being prepared for these kinds of events and responding to these events. And we will do our very best to keep everyone safe and healthy.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you for your efforts and the work that you and everyone at UNMH are doing. We truly, truly appreciate it. He's Dr. David Pitcher, Senior Associate Dean of Clinical Affairs for the University of New Mexico School of Medicine. Thank you again for being with me and stay healthy, okay?
You bet. Thank you.
To continue the conversation about hospital readiness and to see how ready they are at clinics, I'm on the line with Dr. Alicia Parada. She is Chief of UNM's Division of General Internal Medicine, and she's the Medical Director of the UNM Southwest Mesa Clinic. Dr. Parada, thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, of course. Happy to be here.
So tell me quickly, how are you and your family doing? Is everyone all right?
Yes, everyone's all right. You know, it's a trying time because as a healthcare provider, we have to be very cautious about exposing our families. And so, you know, we're taking those extra precautions.
What kind of precautions are you taking?
Well, my parents are older, and so I'm actually not visiting them at all. I had my son come home from LA, and he's working remotely from his job in LA, and I quarantined him, and he's staying with my parents so that he can help them. But again, I'm really minimizing my time with family and practicing that social distancing because I do not want to accidentally infect them.
Is everyone at the clinic and at UNMH, are they taking the same measures?
I hope so. I think there's people who are really doing their best and taking those measures. And unfortunately, you know, just like people we see in the community, there's some that haven't really had the realization that every time that we practice these social distancing measures, that we're preventing the transmission. So, you know, I really hope that people recognize that with our numbers going up the way that they are, and our hospital census growing, that, you know, there is transmission happening in the community and we all have to be safe. We're all potential vectors.
Who do you serve at the Southwest Mesa Clinic?
So our patients are, we have outpatient adult internal medicine patients, which are usually very complex patients. We have some healthy, well patients, but the majority of our patients are elderly or have multiple complex medical problems with a lot of complications. And then we also have a pediatrics practice there.
Mm. So you would say a good number of your patients are at high risk?
Correct. A large portion of our population is at high risk.
when it comes to social distancing, from what I'm understanding, some of the high-risk people are not adhering to the social distancing guidelines. What are you all doing at the clinic to try to influence them to really follow these guidelines?
So we're doing a lot of education, and we're actually practicing that. We're modeling that. We're actually limiting face-to-face visits unless it's absolutely necessary. So at our outpatient clinics at UNM, we're really trying to do as many visits as possible by phone, and in some cases, video visits. And so I've actually been piloting the video visit program for the outpatient primary care clinics at UNM. I've done that, and it's wonderful. It's a great thing to do, video visits. Also, the telephone visits have gone a long way, and now we're actually getting reimbursement from it, where we weren't before, from insurance companies. Hmm. So that's been great, because we can do a lot over the phone. And then, you know, when people do need to be seen in person, we're trying to minimize the amount of time that we're actually face-to-face with them, because we know when you're with somebody for an extended period of time and it's less than 6 feet, that's when the transmission occurs.
Do you feel that you all at the clinic are being supported?
Yeah, I think this is all new for everybody. It's happened very rapidly. You know, when you really think about when all of this really hit, it was only about a month ago, maybe even a little less than that. You know, I think UNM is really hearing us. We're trying to all work together as a team. When I hear what's happening nationally and in some of the hotspot areas, you know, these things weren't occurring. And, you know, I have to give kudos to our governor and to our mayor for all of the hard work that they've been doing. And I know it's really hard for communities with the businesses shutting down, and a lot of people are losing their jobs, and a lot of people are losing their lives. Mm-hmm. And so for all of us to be aware of that, and to remember that when we're providing care, when we're talking about what our goals are and what we're doing right now, I think the hospital has been doing, you know, as good as possible, and they take feedback. And so that, you know, that's all you can hope for in a situation like this. We've never had to do this before.
Yeah, no one has had to do this before, and everyone is coming up with solutions almost on the fly and figuring out best practices as they work. But the thing is, sometimes those mm-hmm. best practices only work for the day or the exact moment. Now, as far as supplies at the clinic, do you feel that you all have enough gowns, gloves, and masks?
Well, that's kind of the point of limiting the amount of face-to-face time and limiting the amount of clinicians that are actually coming into contact with patients.
Yeah.
The PPE that we have, we're really trying to preserve. From what we're told, we have enough at the hospital. We've really limited what we have at the clinics because we're trying to create sites where patients go for testing so that we're not creating exposure risks at the clinic. Okay. And potentially exposing other people. Because a lot of our clinics, like South Los Mesa, we have a pharmacy, we have radiology, we have labs. So, you know, we're trying to minimize any potential transmissions that are happening with people who are what I call the quote well people, because we know that there's people that are walking around who are asymptomatic, so with no symptoms, who are carriers and can transmit the virus.
Mm-hmm. And that makes it dangerous for everyone. Now, are you at the clinic? Are you preparing for a flood of patients to be coming in? I mean, because according to these models, these next few weeks and months, it's about to get pretty hectic.
Yeah. So as a healthcare system, we're coming up with solutions. So the biggest surge is going to be within the hospital of patients that need admission, right? So those are the people who become really unstable and need to be, you know, ventilated or need extra support. So in the clinics, you know, we're doing a lot of the telephone visits. We're trying to figure out how we can support the inpatient by keeping the people who can be discharged home, because the vast majority of the patients can be managed at home.
Okay.
There's a lot of people with COVID-19 that have mild symptoms. And so part of what our role as primary care physicians will be to not only keep the COVID-19 patients who can be supported at home, keep them at home, and to monitor them closely and make sure that they don't need inpatient support or hospital support,
mm-hmm.
but also to manage our own patients, our existing population with our chronic medical problems, to ensure that they don't decompensate and their medical issues don't become so severe and uncontrolled that they need hospitalization. We're trying to spare those beds for the COVID-19 patients and trying to manage everybody else as an outpatient.
And that's an extreme task for doctors, nurses, and medical staff. How are you all feeling? It's incredibly stressful. I'm sure you all are working probably twice as long as you already do, which were already long hours. What are you all doing to keep each other's morale up?
Within our division, even within the clinic, we're doing regular Zoom check-ins. So, you know, you see all the Zoom happy hours and all these Zoom things that families are doing. Yeah. We're doing that so within our, like, even our own clinic, we're minimizing our face-to-face time. We're practicing the 6 feet apart, no more than 5 people in an area.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I had a clinician meeting today within my clinic, and everybody sat at their workstations and we all signed in on Zoom. And within my division, you know, I have like 35 faculty, and we are all scattered in all the clinics around the city, and even people, you know, at the VA are part of our academic department.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big comfort. It's really nice to see people when you otherwise can't, because, you know, we've actually, you know, I have an office at the main hospital, and I've given up our division offices to the inpatient people so that they can social distance and do their work.
Mm-hmm.
And we've all gone out to our clinic.
Okay. Okay. Now, last question for you, two-part question. What is it that people can do to definitely keep themselves well? And what is it that you want our listeners to know about not only COVID-19, but what's going on and how we all should be acting in the midst of this?
Sure. I think, you know, listen to our governor and our mayor and your healthcare professionals. This is real. It's happening. We have a big opportunity in New Mexico to continue to flatten the curve. We've seen some good outcomes from what we've done so far. And there's a lot of potential lives that will be saved as a result. We're all at risk, every single one of us. And our families are at risk. And so every time that we're doing anything, to think about that. Would you want to take this home to your family member?
Yeah.
Your son, your daughter, your spouse.
Thank you for the work that you're doing. Kudos to you and your entire staff. She is the chief of UNM's Division of General Internal Medicine and the medical director of the UNM Southwest Mesa Clinic, Dr. Alicia Parada. Thank you so much for being on the show. Stay healthy, okay?
Thank you, Colin.
To find out more about hospital preparedness and hospital readiness, I'm on the line with Jeff Bourgeois. He is president and CEO of the San Juan Regional Medical Center. Jeff, thanks so much for being with me today. How are you?
I'm doing well, Khalil. My pleasure.
Then let me ask you this. How are you and your family doing? Is everyone doing okay?
Our family is blessed with good health, and they're all doing well. Thank you so much.
That's really good to hear. Of course. Now, you're in the Four Corners area, and we know the Navajo Nation has been hit particularly hard by COVID cases thus far. Have you already seen a surge in patients with coronavirus?
Khalil, I wouldn't call it a surge, but we certainly have some in our hospital. And we have a number of patients that we call rule out, meaning they have the signs and symptoms of the virus, but we do not yet have a positive test result back yet or any test results. So we're awaiting those. And we're very grateful for the staff at the state scientific lab. They've responded to this crisis by helping hospitals everywhere prioritize the resulting of inpatient test results so we can get a diagnosis as quickly as possible.
How quickly do those normally turn around for you?
They can turn around usually in 24 to 36 hours, depending on when the specimen arrives to the lab in Albuquerque.
Okay, that's good. That helps you identify things quickly. Now, question for you. Are you all able to transport people from more rural areas to your hospital? And if so, do you face challenges if suddenly many people need to come around at the same time frame?
We have accepted some patients from other communities, namely the eastern Arizona and then the Shiprock, New Mexico area. And we routinely do that as part of our normal course of operations. And so some of the patients that have either been diagnosed with COVID or suspected COVID came from that area of our service area, much like other patients would at any other time.
Do you feel like you have enough ventilators? Do you feel like you have enough access to PPEs?
We are in great shape there now for the moment. What we are all watching, as hospitals are everywhere, are the models that predict the rate at which new patients will present with signs and symptoms of the illness. So, and the uncertainty is just the degree of uncertainty and lack of precision in the modeling is just based on the reality that the modelers have to work with. You know, it's just limited data points. And so your range of possibilities go from something that's totally manageable to something that's not. And would beat our state's capacity. So we're paying attention to it closely, but for the moment, our bed capacity, our ventilator and equipment and PPE and staff capacity is adequate for what we are seeing at the moment today.
Well, talk to me about how what that means for the staff, as right now you all are fully stocked and prepared for what you're dealing with, but you looking at these models that are imperfect, as you just mentioned, but they potentially could say that, hey, in a week and a half, be prepared to get hit with a maelstrom of people coming into your facility. How does the staff feel about that, knowing that a potential tidal wave can hit them?
I will tell you that, first of all, the frontline caregivers here, you know, hero is not a word I use lightly, but these folks have stepped up and are doing the work that is asked of them with unbelievable commitment and compassion for every patient. Frontline caregivers everywhere in this fight should be commended, and really our country, I think, needs to take note of what we've asked these people to do after this passes and make sure that going forward they're well taken care of. You know, the uncertainty of knowing exactly what our patient volume is something that makes everyone worry a little bit. That said, we have members of our local team here appointed to various committees at the state level and the statewide planning in response to this. And there's a plan to help us move patients to other facilities if we're not able to carry the workload here, and possibility even of finding some staffing resources to send to us. And those plans are just under constant development and review at a centralized level through the Department of Health that is really has our state's emergency kind of command center for our statewide response to COVID-19.
Now, speaking about that and the Department of Health and the state and their assistance to you all, the governor made some announcements about making moves to add capacity in Albuquerque, and she said that they were looking to do that around the state, including up where you are. Have you all been in conversation with the state administration about this?
Or representatives of the administration? You know, the Army Corps of Engineers has been in various communities throughout our state, Albuquerque, Santa Fe, Las Cruces, Gallup, Farmington, that I can tell you, and are looking at how to operationalize what they call alternate sites of care. You know, I'm leaving that planning to those experts, and they're developing those plans as we speak.
Okay. You feel like you're getting what you need from the state or the federal government?
You know, I don't think we could ask anything more from our governments at the state or federal level. This is an unprecedented circumstance for our country, and I think their actions are prudent and wise, given the knowledge we have at hand at the moment. And I support what they're doing and appreciate every bit of relief and assistance that's been provided to date.
Okay. I've got two more questions for you. Yesterday, I was speaking to people about some of the issues that are facing tribal lands and what tribal leaders are dealing with. And one person who lives near Shiprock was mentioning that one problem that they have is many of the elders speak Navajo and Navajo only. And there are not many people who can translate. So it's very difficult to get medical instructions or for someone to really correctly, accurately give you their symptoms and how they're feeling. Do you have people on staff who can speak Navajo and translate for patients?
We do. And we also have as do most hospitals, a translation service that is done via phone. But it provides individuals that can communicate in a wide range of languages, almost any language spoken on the face of the earth. It's really an incredible service because hospitals need to be prepared for that. And we're such a mobile society from a global perspective. There's, you know, opportunity for at any hospital anywhere to have a patient that speaks a language that is not common to the local area. So those translation services are extremely important to what we do.
I'm glad to hear that you all have them. And finally, what's the biggest challenge you face moving forward?
You know, I think our biggest challenge will be kind of twofold, is getting our staff and our patients through whatever surge we experience. And then behind that is rebuilding the services of the hospital, because like so many other businesses, all of our non-essential services have been ordered to stop through a public health order for the right reasons. But, you know, that is having a significant impact on our local economic circumstance as it is for everyone else.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you for the work that you and your staff are doing. Like you said, they're heroes, and put yourself in that hero group. It's very important what you all are doing, not just for the community in the Shiprock, Farmington area, or the state of New Mexico or the United States, but as I said earlier at the top of our call, for the entire world. Thank you very much for everything. He is Mr. Jeff Bourgeois, President and CEO of the San Juan Regional Medical Center. Sir, continue doing great work and stay healthy, okay?
Thank you, Khalil. Appreciate you.
Matt Grubbs, a senior producer over at our partner New Mexico PBS, interviewed Human Services Department Secretary David Scrace on Wednesday afternoon about reworking processes inside hospitals to make sure patients can be treated efficiently. Here's that clip.
Dr. Scrace, thanks for taking just a few minutes to update us on what's been going on. First of all, let's talk about testing capacity. How has that grown? And how quickly is it ramping up, and where do you want to see it?
I've been involved with testing under Secretary Kunkel, who's the Secretary of the Department of Health. We have both worked on that. She is the lead right now, but New Mexico actually has the most testing per population per day, COVID day, of anywhere in the whole world. We have started this, I think, with the ability to do about 600 tests a day. That is more than doubled, and there are plans to expand it even further. That's the laboratory capacity, but there's also the field testing and, you know, what we know of as the drive-through testing, which is our state model for that. We don't want people to go to healthcare facilities. If you go online to the DOH website, you can take a questionnaire about your symptoms and travel and some other things. That's being updated, but it will give you some guidance as to whether or not you should go get a test.
Is part of the reason, I know that you've relaxed the requirements to get a test, but is part of the reason that we're all in our homes and limiting movements because we weren't able to roll out those tests earlier?
No, that really has nothing to do with it. Testing, number one, gives folks fairly quick feedback about whether or not they have COVID. But if you're sick enough or have an exposure like travel or you're high risk and you fall in the category where you're getting a test, you should be self-isolating for 14 days, whether you have the test or not. And I don't think we were slow at all rolling out. It was quite rapid. There were some long lines that one weekend because demand exceeded capacity, but we have a 1-2% positive rate. And I think all in all, we're doing extremely well. We're staying at home because we know, based on evidence, it's the only profound way to control the spread of this virus. And social isolation completely drives all of the other measures that we have, which I'm sure we'll talk about: hospital utilization, ICU utilization, ventilator utilization. Our models, there's nothing like the degree of social isolation that influences outcomes. And so that's why we're so focused on that.
You talked yesterday during the governor's briefing about the doubling rate. And I think it's difficult. Most of us just don't think exponentially. We think in a line. But just to give folks an example, as you and I speak right now, there were 315 positive COVID-19 cases at the last checkpoint. If those are doubling every 2 days, in 5 days, you have over 10,000. If they're doubling every 3 days, that goes down to 3,200. So already there, just that one day gets people, you know, about 7,000 fewer positive cases. Can you talk a little bit about why that's so important to let people know that we have to slow down the spread?
The primary reason for slowing down the spread is to, and this has become almost trite now, but to flatten the curve. That high bell-shaped curve completely overwhelms the delivery system. If we can flatten that curve, we have the capacity to take care of less people actually over a longer period of time. So that's incredibly important. The doubling time, actually more good news. It's been 4 days since we were at 190. And if we have, I think, something like 60 or less cases reported today, our doubling time will now be 5 days. And that's amazing. You've done the math. You know, so just a doubling time in 30 days, if it's five, it doubles six times. If the doubling time, like in New York, is two, it doubles 15 times. Millions of, you know, that multiplies out to a very high difference, and you've already done the math correctly. People staying at home reduces the spread of the disease. The doubling time is based on the incubation period of the virus, 5.1 days, we think, and the average number of people infected. Staying home reduces the average number of people that get infected or that can infect others, and it also therefore lengthens the doubling time.
You've said that 90% of the state's ICU or critical care beds are in Albuquerque. I would imagine that's a huge challenge for you. How are you working to connect some of these rural providers, whether it's just in rural parts of the state proper or on the Navajo Nation, to connect them to these resources in Albuquerque?
Well, we have, I mentioned yesterday, we have the medical advisory team that's now up and running, headed by Michael Richards from the university, who is, his whole career is actually, other than being the COO of the University Health Sciences Center, has been in disaster management. He's the head of the team. He's brought in Clay Holderman, who's the COO of Presbyterian. He's brought in Troy Greer, who's hospital leader, the CEO of Loveless Hospital. And they're literally holed up for 2 weeks, 6 feet apart, up in a facility we're using right now that is empty because those folks are working from home, planning out the strategy. There are also regional hospitals, including hospitals in Farmington, Santa Fe, Las Cruces, and Roswell, sort of a hub and spoke model where the smaller hospitals will feed to those regional hospitals, the regional hospitals will feed to Albuquerque. Transportation is a huge part of that. We've done a needs assessment, capacity assessments are going on this week, individual calls from these really expert hospital leaders out to the hub and spoke hospitals. The spoke hospitals will be contacting their hospitals. We're really trying to bring the delivery system together into a single delivery system for the purpose of this upcoming pandemic surge.
You're expecting, based on the modeling that you've looked at, to see the peak infection rate when?
Well, there are a lot of models out there, and there are a lot of ways of looking at it. I think that I would predict that we'll see a surge here this week in some areas of the state. I think our data suggests that we may see a surge more in the middle of the month or toward the end of the month. Remember, as people stay home and as that doubling time increases, that will move the peak out further and further, which allows even more time to get ready, more time to get additional equipment, ventilators, personal protective equipment, which I'll call PPE from now on. And so this doubling time really could be a great opportunity for the state to get additional resources to deal with the surge and to slow the angle of that curve so we don't immediately overwhelm the healthcare system as we see on TV has happened in other states.
Sure. As you speak to the hospitals around the state and they talk to you about things like adding beds in tents or temporary locations, is there sort of a best practice to what you want those beds to be used for? Do you want them to be used for standard medical issues and leave the COVID to the emergency rooms? How does that work?
Well, there's some principles that guide the decision-making around that that Mike Richards has taught me. And the first principle is, number one, we want people as much as possible to be cared for in their own communities within the limits of the resources there. So in other words, if someone just needs general hospital care and can be cared for in a rural hospital, there's absolutely no reason to transfer them to a spoke hospital or the hub in Albuquerque. Number two, that's really important as well, is that in these situations, we do not want to take care of people who are on ventilators in tents. So what we do, as we talked yesterday about building out the first floor of the old Loveless Hospital, adding another 200 beds to our system. But as we do that, that will be a COVID-only facility, but probably not an intensive care unit facility. If we have three excellent hospitals in Albuquerque, all with extensive ICU capacity, all looking to double that ICU capacity, either building out patient rooms or operating rooms or GI labs or other rooms like that. So we want to keep people in their communities. And then the third thing is, I think we can lift up the capabilities of those rural hospitals more than they might think by a number of mechanisms. One is teaching about COVID through Project Echo, and we're sponsoring and working with them every Friday for physicians at noon. And number two is, I think, you know, that one of the big dilemmas in this is a lot of our older physicians, and I guess I'm in that group, you know, really shouldn't be going into hospitals if they're over 60. They're at much, much higher risk. But there's absolutely no reason that a retired pulmonologist can't sit in their living room and walk a primary care physician in a rural hospital through basic care or talk about the need for transfer. And so we're really going to go to an all hands on deck model, trying to involve every care provider in the state in some way or another. Our phones basically ring off the hook from retired physicians who want to figure out a way to help, and particularly if they don't have to go in at age 75 into an intensive care unit with covered with PPEs. We're trying to take out all the redundancy in the system and all those communication hurdles and barriers, remove those so we can really focus clinicians' time on taking care of patients.
Dr. Scrace, we appreciate your time and your work, and we know you have a lot more to do. We look forward to hearing from you again soon.
There's a great need to have medical staff at the ready to help with the pandemic, but in-person classes got canceled for everyone, including future nurses. KUNM's Bryce Dix had a conversation with one nursing student who says without hands-on training this semester, she's not feeling well prepared.
Can you kind of run down what's been going on for your semester regarding COVID-19? What has UNM been telling you? Are you doing your clinicals anymore? How's your education looking like right now?
So about halfway through our semester, it kind of started with spring break. We only get 2 days for spring break. So Thursday and Friday, we all left campus about mid-March. And then we started seeing that UNM main campus was having classes online. And we started getting a little bit nervous because nursing school is very hard. And online nursing school is extremely hard. So what happened was we pretty much just never came back from spring break. They told us that our classes were going to continue remotely. They've been voicing over our PowerPoint presentations and then posting those, which is really less than ideal. A couple of our other lectures are just over Zoom now. Clinicals are completely canceled, so we argued that those of us who are interns, our internship hours should count for clinical hours, which luckily they approved. We didn't think that they would, which is really nice because we're still getting that like one-on-one direct patient care. For those individuals who are not interns, they're having to complete online seminars and simulations, which is really difficult.
Can you explain to me why that is difficult for a nursing student? Obviously, it's nursing, right? You need to be touching people. But do you have any examples of why it would be a little bit difficult for me as a person to be doing nursing classes straight online through a simulation?
Like, it's one thing to learn it in the classroom, but if you can't actually get the materials in your hands and apply them to a real person, you're just not going to get that muscle memory. It's like, you can practice on a friend, maybe on your teddy bear, but it's incompatible. It's not the same thing.
Do you feel like you are still prepared to go on into the workforce if COVID-19 is still a problem? You're almost done. You have a semester, right? So do you feel prepared even if they might have to kick off 2 semesters of clinical experience for you?
It's absolutely terrifying, the fact that I'm going to graduate in August and be trusted with people's lives as a 21-year-old. Doing my internship is probably the best experience that I could have. I think it's almost better than clinical. So I'm really, really thankful that I have an internship that still allows me to practice my nursing skills and interact with patients. But if we have to continue this in level 5, I'm really apprehensive about being prepared as a nurse after graduation and about passing my boards, especially because the online content that we're receiving, it's with a voiceover PowerPoint, you can't ask questions or clarify. And I don't feel like that's very engaging. Nursing school is different. Like, you can't just, you know, look up a Quizlet or take your exam with a friend. Like, this isn't just about cramming in material. It's about learning it so that you can help people get better after you graduate.
So do you feel like since you pay to actually get that hands-on experience for nursing school, do you think that UNM is giving you a great alternative? Or do you feel like your money's kind of going to waste at this point?
No, absolutely not. Especially because UNM College of Nursing has a differential. So nursing students pay about twice as much as main campus. And what we pay for is that in-person clinical experience and lab exposure and instructors in a classroom sitting there telling us how they do their job. I know the university has purchased these online simulation tools, so they are attempting to compensate for the lost clinical hours. I'm not super familiar with that process because I am an intern, so I don't have to complete those online simulations. But we reached out to one of our instructors and asked if he could just lecture us like normal over Zoom, because then at least we can still ask questions and it just feels like a little bit more close to our routine. And he was basically like, you know, we're having to put in extra hours and these are longer days for us. And it was really just a laundry list of him complaining about how hard this has been for him. And I understand that, but students are really struggling, especially someone like me. I'm someone who craves routine and structure. And now I'm at home and I feel like I'm teaching myself. So, no, I don't feel like I'm getting my money's worth.
Great. You answered all my questions. One more. Is there anything you are concerned about regarding nursing, maybe something else in your life?
My biggest concern is just falling behind. I am a straight A student and I really value my GPA, and I feel like I'm just not getting the same level of education anymore, and I'm really afraid about that I'm not going to pass my NCLEX when I graduate, that I'm not going to be prepared. Yeah, I think that's really my biggest concern right now, is falling behind in coursework and just not getting the same level of like saturation in material. And it's really nerve-wracking. We all just want to graduate on time, and we got into this program because we want to help people get better. So we want to get out there and help people get better. Even just getting out of my house the past few days to go to work, it's really rewarding. Couldn't imagine doing anything else.
Thank you for talking with me. I really appreciate it.
Special thanks to all of our guests and to Matt Grubbs from New Mexico PBS for contributing to the show. We'll have links to all of the reporting we talked about in today's episode online at KUNM.org. Time to check out the resources we heard about today. Yes, yes, yes. Masks. If you want to help with making masks, go and send an email to craftresponders@gmail.com. We had them on our show earlier in the week. They will give you all the information you need to help people with masks. Go to Albuquerque Mutual Aid, www.ffol.org/mutualaid.html. Find out how you can help there. And if you are worried that you or someone you know may be coming down with symptoms to the coronavirus, call the Department of Health's coronavirus hotline, 855-600-3453. That's 855-600-3453. You can find a full list of the resources we talk about on each episode and opportunities to donate or help online at bit.ly/ynmghub. And don't forget, we want to hear how things are going for you. We really want to hear about it. Call us up, 505-218-7084, and we will play your messages on our show. Or you can email us at yournmgov@gmail.com. Why should you call? Well, this is why. Tomorrow's show, we ask you what is changing in what you care about. Yeah, many of us now have time to ponder and reflect on what is truly important. Tomorrow, we talk to people about what's important to them in this new world. We also have the mayor of Albuquerque, conversations with Instacart workers who have gone on strike. Very important. And because it's been a hard, hard week and all the bars are closed, a mixologist joins me to craft some cocktails for the weekend. All that tomorrow. Your New Mexico Government is executive produced by Marisa DeMarco. It's produced by yours truly. News update by Marisa DeMarco. We are grateful for the contributions of New Mexico PBS and Mr. Matt Grubbs. Super awesome shout out to Taylor Velasquez for the editing help today. Theme music is done by Pope. Yes, yes, y'all. Hear us all week long on KUNM's airwaves at 8 p.m. online. You can find this show on KUNM.org or subscribe through iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Your New Mexico Government is a collaboration between KUNM, New Mexico PBS, and the Santa Fe Reporter. Funding for our coverage is provided in part by the Thornburg Foundation and the New Mexico Local News Fund. For everyone here at Your New Mexico Government, I'm Khalil Ekolota. Thanks for listening.